A growing proportion of high net worth individuals in Australia are women. They are accumulating their own wealth with their own investment strategies. But are they getting the help they need from the finance sector, which has grown up used to dealing with men? Is it a bit like the old used car sales sector, where the salesman looks at the man and ignores the woman? Well, a new report from JB Weir shows that, well, it might not be that bad, but there is a need for a change of approach. So what's JB Weir doing about it all? That's this week.
The Morning Call from NAB with Phil Dobby.
The Weekend Edition.
Well, there are more high net worth women in Australia than ever before for a variety of reasons. I mean, they've got better jobs, greater intergenerational wealth is now being passed down, and sadly as well, a lot of it is also coming through divorce, particularly divorce over the age of 50, which is, you know, probably when the snoring kicks in. But is the finance industry doing a good job of meeting the needs of these new sophisticated female investors, or do advisors still treat investment as though it's a bit of a man's world? Well, there's been some research from JB Weir carried out in conjunction with Core Data, which shows that sadly that is the case. The industry needs to move where the market is, and increasingly that's women. So Maria Lycoris is CEO of JB Weir. So you have been managing wealth, not you personally, of course, for clients since 1840. Before the research, were you seeing this change that more and more customers were women, and how pronounced, how significant has that change been?
So thanks, Phil, for having me here today. So yeah, I mean, I've been in this industry for over 25 years, and definitely over the last few years, we've seen this rise in the wealth of women. More and more of our clients these days are coming through as females, particularly through, you know, being in leadership roles, having higher education, more female entrepreneurs as well. So we get a lot of our clients is through business sales, and we've seen more women coming through from that. As it says in the paper, and you mentioned a bit at the beginning, it's definitely divorces and inheritances. So those two areas have definitely been a rise for us, but it is probably a bit more recent. And having been in the industry for about 25 years, I can definitely say that I don't think it's an industry that has been built or established or tailored to the needs of women, which, you know, is part of the purpose of the paper, which is to ensure that there was a good understanding of what was happening in this marketplace, what's going to happen in the next 10 years in particular with this intergenerational wealth transfer, and a call out to the wealth management industry that it's time to take a little bit of a stock. Have a look at what's happening out there and think about how you start to educate the business and start to move the business to a model where it builds good, great, trusted relationships with women and supports them in managing that wealth.
So imagine even before we had this shift, in those dark old days when, you know, men were going out to work and were managing everything, even then there would be a problem because obviously they're going to pop their clogs earlier. And women would be left trying to scoop up, you know, where money's sitting, how it's managed, and would have to learn pretty quickly, getting up to speed with, you know, all this, in effect, inherited wealth.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. And, you know, in my career, I've seen, you know, several situations like this where, you know, I remember a time where we had a call that came into our call center. And it was a client of ours. She'd been a client a long time, but she was a client within a couple. And her husband passed away. She had never attended any of the meetings with the advisor. And not only that, she actually didn't really know what all the bank accounts were or the extent of their financial wealth. And so that was a really, really difficult time for her. And so thankfully we're able to step in and help her out. But, you know, and, you know, what we're calling out here is actually the need for women to take more control and ownership of that wealth today. And one of the things that you see in the paper in particular is that we are a bit concerned about this, the baby boomers. Out there, which are part of that generation that you are talking about, because only 55% of them actually today have a trusted relationship with an advisor. We're not sure how involved they are in that relationship, as compared to the Gen Ys, that 67% have a relationship. So I do worry about the baby boomers and making sure that they're not just getting advice when they're in a crisis situation, that they're actually getting their financial affairs in order a lot earlier so that that doesn't happen to them.
And what do you think about, you know, the situation with couples? So, because we are taught very much to have our own, I mean, it's our wealth fund, you know, individually, and we're taught to look at it as an individual. And in fact, there's a quote in the paper about one woman saying that she's, her husband's more conservative because he's older, so he's closer to retirement, and he's not going to get an inheritance, so he's very, very cautious, where she is going to get an inheritance so she can take a bigger risk, which is fine. But I mean, ultimately, you know, he's going to die. She's going to get his money. I mean, I would have thought in situations like that, where you're in an established relationship, even though you're separate wealth funds, you'd be wanting to look at it as a combined decision, wouldn't you? You'd want to be saying, well, okay, you take the risk, I'll be more cautious. You wouldn't be looking and saying, well, what's in it for me? Because ultimately, you know, you're part of a couple and it's part of a family, and it's who manages that, you know, who manages though, almost like both accounts, so that you've got a more holistic picture. But it's rarely seen that way.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. I've actually seen both scenarios. I've seen the scenario where, you know, the husband and wife actually have their own separate accounts. I used to work with a couple that actually, you know, wanted them kept very separate. And that's the way they've managed their financial affairs. But what you're talking about is the majority of cases. And what we're talking about in the paper is that the financial advisor needs to get to know each of the individuals and find out what they are looking for with their future and how they want to manage that wealth. Sometimes a couple will want to do that as an absolute combined effort, but they could have multiple accounts to deal with that. And so the woman may have a particular financial account where she wants to take more risk with it, and she wants to bring in different types of investments. And the husband might have an account where he doesn't want that. And then they might have a shared account where it's their combined way of looking at things that they invest. So there's lots of ways to manage this. But the most important thing is that the financial advisor doesn't ignore the woman in those conversations, that they actually spend the time to get to know each of them and actually what they want to do with their financial future. And they actually tailor their advice to those particular circumstances rather than making assumptions about what the couple is looking for and just tailoring it to the voice of one person in the relationship.
And what are women, and actually what are men, what are people looking for from advisors? Are they, what is that advice? Is it just, well, you know, explaining the way various elements of the portfolio might work, or is it making strong recommendations, or do people feel like, no, they make the decisions themselves? And does that differ from men and women as well? I mean, there has to be an element of being educated enough to be able to make your own call, but at the same time, you want to make sure that you've got someone who can ratify or help you in the right direction.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, there's a mix of people out there in the market. There are people that are totally self-directed and they want to make all of their own decisions. Then there are people that are, you know, they like to make the decisions, but they want to test it and check in with someone. And lastly, they want someone who completely supports them in making those decisions. And, you know, in the paper, we do talk about the fact that women do recognize the value of advice, and they are looking for great advice. But they're looking for kind of two main things, right? The first thing is they want an advisor who they can trust. They want someone who's going to spend the time with them to understand the intricacies of their lives, their family situation, their unique goals. And they also want them to understand their experiences that have shaped how they think about decision making. So that's the first thing. So they're looking for someone who's going to be a trusted partner and someone who knows them as a person. And then when it comes to their investments, women are actually more sophisticated than people believe them to be. In the paper, we've call out the fact that women rate themselves at the same level of financial investment knowledge as men. They want to be offered investments both in the traditional sectors and the non-traditional sectors. But what's happening is they're not getting access to those things. So there's these unconscious biases that are coming through around women, around their financial knowledge and capability. That means we're seeing barriers placed in front of women, and they're not ultimately getting access to the types of investments that they're looking for. So, you know, they do have real estate, Australian shares and cash, but they also want alternatives. They also want to start investing in impact. They're looking for investments that support the social good, and they want financial advisors to bring that to them.
Right. So is that part of it then, that they've got more empathy or more social concern than male investors? Is there a gender divide on that?
I completely agree. I think they're looking for empathy in the relationships that they form with the advisors. That's definitely one of the things that women are calling out that is missing. So they need someone who can bring that kind of capability and skill set. And they're also looking for investments that support the social good. So 1 in 5 women seek investments with social good elements, and another 28% actually treat it as an added advantage in asset allocations. And we know they're more likely to have charitable interests, impact investing, and particularly investing in areas of financial inclusion and empowerment. But they're also calling out that they are sophisticated investors, which means they still want great performance.
Yeah.
So they're looking for both sides, both purpose and performance.
Yeah, for sure. And you said that they, you know, they needed their advisors to understand them. So do you think it's difficult for a, let's say, a 35-year-old woman to be understood by a 55-year-old man who might be their advisor?
I don't want to make assumptions about all 55-year-old men out there, because I work with a lot of wonderful men at that age, and they do have
your place is probably full of them. Exactly.
They have a lot of empathy, and they do have a lot of female clients that they engage with really well. I think it's like everything when you're dealing with an individual, you need to bring the particular communication style and engagement style that will work with them. So, you know, after you get to know them a bit, then you can adjust your style appropriately to the person that you're dealing with. And I think men are very capable of doing that. But we want to make sure that they don't go into their conversations, necessarily acting the same way that they may with a male, which may be different than what a male's or female is looking for.
So, and is this part of this financial literacy and how it's learnt and at what stage and by who? So, for example, it's interesting, isn't it, at school? We get measured at school by our exam results, and then we go out and we get a job. At no point in that process are we told how to manage the money that we make through that job. So is part and parcel of it actually, you know, irrespective of gender, does it really start at school? Should we be actually teaching more financial literacy so people are more savvy from when they start earning? Because actually for women, I would have thought a lot of this advice is needed early, because you need to work out, well, if I'm going to take time off or, take a break from my career because we're going to have kids, how is that going to impact my wealth down the track? You know, so a lot of the big decision making is made early for women.
I personally think financial literacy is critical in this country, and I think it's critical at young ages. I have a son, he's 23, but I remember when he was in high school, he said to me, because he knows what I do and, the financial services industry does. And he said to me, Mom, I can't believe that, I think he was taking a course, like a business type course in high school. And he said to me, I don't understand why they don't teach us about superannuation, or we're not taught about credit cards or bank accounts, or, how do you manage a mortgage, or share stock buying, or, all kinds of things like that. He goes, because I feel like that'd be really important stuff that you talk about every day, and we should get to understand that. So I definitely think there's a need out there. I think that young people want to learn more about financial affairs, and I think that would really help them in the future. And a big, as I've been sharing this paper with a lot of my clients, a lot of them have come back to me and say, I want my children, it's not just their female children, their male children, to be more educated. They're like, oh, this is really important what you're saying. What can you do to help my daughters and my sons? So definitely, I think not only there's a need in high schools to learn financial literacy. But I think there's also a role that organizations like mine play, where we need to support our clients and the children of our clients around that education. So when the intergenerational wealth transfer occurs, that they're ready and prepared to take on the wealth. And so not only do we support them with financial literacy, but we also get them to get a better understanding of the investment portfolios that their parents have and what may land in their laps later in life. But there was also one point I wanted to come back that you talked about, which was about women and the need for financial literacy. I think actually the interesting thing is a lot of times it's women that manage the budget in a family. So women are actually pretty good at this stuff. Sometimes better than some of the others. And, you know, also what we talk about the paper is this concept of this older daughter effect. So what we're seeing is that a lot of the intergenerational wealth is actually the family finances is going to go to the oldest daughter to manage it on behalf of the family. And I think that comes from the fact that not only are those females sometimes the carers of their parents, but they are really good at managing money. And they're also really good at supporting the values of the family in managing that wealth into the future.
Yeah, but there's a big difference, isn't there, between managing a day-to-day budget and managing wealth going forwards. And so there might be, so I guess you want to make sure that that's not confused.
Yes.
But is this a land grab opportunity then? I mean, if you are an advisor that can satisfy the needs of what is clearly a rapidly growing, it seems, proportion of the wealth management customer base, which are women. If you can satisfy their needs, then there's an opportunity for you to take a bigger slice of the total market here.
Well, I mean, I think the fact that in the future, 65% of the $5 trillion is going to land in the hands of women, then I think, every financial advisor should wake up to the fact that, their client base is going to change. So it's not just a grab today of the fact that this is a great opportunity that could be taken advantage of. I actually think that the future of these businesses is going to look very different. So they really need to start thinking today about how they think about engaging with women. There are some financial advice businesses out there that target women specifically. Many of them are female-led organizations, and they're really growing and doing really well. This is definitely a call out that this is a space that no one really owns. So this is a great opportunity for JB Weir, but other organizations as well. And thirdly, yeah, absolutely. Your business, your clients of the future are not your clients of today. So it's time to make a change.
Right. So what are you doing? What are the changes at JB Weir?
Yeah. So we're starting to work through a strategy around this. We've got a big pillar of what we will do will be around education, which we talked about a bit, but it's going to be education to our advisors and our broader business units that we're a part of at NAB.
Those 55-year-old men that you got sitting behind you.
Yeah. Around how to engage with women in the best way, how to network towards women, how to grow that client base. So we'll definitely be doing that kind of work. We're building education for our clients' children as well. That's going to be a big focus for us as part of this intergenerational wealth piece. We're also looking at how we can support a bunch of community organizations out there that are supporting women more broadly. There's a lot of women givers out there, and there's a lot of women that need financial support. So we think there's a big opportunity to support those organizations. And we want to continue to be a loud voice in this space and continue the thought leadership and advocacy that we're doing to support changes more broadly, to support this growing group of women.
Right. Well, good luck with all of that. And thanks for making us all aware of just how much change is happening in this space. Yeah. And the fact that, there's more women taking more control. I mean, we know. And I'm sadly, I mean, men have got to accept women are just getting smarter, aren't they? Men are getting left behind in so many walks of life.
I'll leave that one.
You don't have to comment on that.
I've got my own views,
but I can see her. And she's smiling and nodding her head, let me tell you. Anyway, that's it. Good to talk, Maria.
Great. Thanks, Phil. Take care.
Now, you know, there's one chart in this report, which you can download from the JB Weir website, by the way, or just Google growth of women and wealth. Women and men in this chart have a similar understanding of the relationship between risk and return and between the risk profile of different types of investments and the need for diversification. Men and women are pretty much the same on all of that, but women have less understanding of the current investment market themes and trends. So they don't know what's going on right now. That's easily fixed. Just tell them to listen to The Morning Call each Monday to Friday. That one is easily solved. Speaking of which, I am back on Monday with another one of those. Enjoy your weekend in the meantime. I'm Phil Dobby for NAB. Thanks for listening today.
The Weekend Edition.